Welcome to the Doctor's Life Podcast with Diane Ansari Wynn, MD. Dr. Diane is a stress and burnout coach for doctors. With her 15 years of experience as an anesthesiologist and certification as a physician development coach, Dr. Diane coaches doctors on how to live a rich life of purpose, fulfillment, freedom, and happiness both at work and at home. In this podcast, Dr. Diane brings together doctors and researchers that are experts in health, wellness, stress, and burnout, as well as doctors that have been successful in clinical practice, academics, non-clinical careers, and business to share their expertise and life experience so that you can live your own life purpose, fulfillment, freedom, and happiness. To get free access to a PDF and video of easy and proven strategies that melt stress away and keep it away, simply register at www.dianeansari-win.com. That's www.dianeansari-win.com. Now here is your host, Dr. Diane Ansari Wynn.
Hi, it's Dr. Diane here, and I have a quick request before we jump into the show. If you like this podcast, it would mean so much if you took just a moment to hop over to iTunes, write a review, and rate the show. That is how other people will find the show and get the same great value from it that I hope that you're getting. It just takes a few moments to click a star rating and write a quick note. Now, on to the show. Today, I am so thrilled to have Dr. Dina Gluberman join us. She is a world expert in using imagery and visualization, and she is a visionary co-founder of Skyros Holistic Holidays, the author of the classic books Life Choices, Life Changes, The Joy of Burnout, and You Are What You Imagine, Three Steps to a New Beginning Using Image Work. She is an international trainer, coach, and psychotherapist. And she has been a pioneer for over 30 years in creating, teaching, and practicing the use of image work to uncover our deepest and truest dreams and carry them through to a new beginning. When I was in the depths of burnout, I stumbled across her book on Amazon. And honest to goodness, I read that book four or five times. And it was a paperback, and I actually remember, like, the cover kind of splitting because I read it so many times. So, of course, I asked Dr. Gluberman to participate, and she so graciously accepted. So, Dina, then, what is burnout in your estimation?
What is burnout? Well, first of all, on some level, the most basic thing about burnout is that your fire is low. And it literally is a burning out. And when I say your fire is low, people whose fire is low know what I'm talking about. There's some sense that the energy has gone from your system. And in my view, it's really not about the fact that you've worked so hard, that you've driven yourself crazy and got exhausted. It's really about the fact that you've come to the end of a particular road in your life, whether that could be at work or relationships or your relationship with your political work or whatever. You've lost your passion. Your heart has gone out of it, but you didn't feel you could stop. And so you drove yourself forward joylessly in the wrong direction. And eventually, what happens is you're a bit like someone who's driving a car with the accelerator and the brake on at the same time. You're driving yourself, but you're divided against yourself. And so you basically hit the wall. And then if you want to recover from burnout, you have to find your joy again. And that's really what my book's about, is understanding why we drive ourselves in the wrong direction and how we can find our way back again.
When you describe that, that feels like exactly where I was, which is why I resonated so much with your message at that time and still today as well.
And can I just add something about this thing about working too hard?
Because
it's quite interesting. So much of what's written about burnout is the fact that people work too hard. Now, when someone is wholehearted, as many of the listeners will know, and it's very common that people will say, it was work that I loved, and I gave it everything, and I worked all hours of the day and night, and people said, where do you find the energy? And I said, oh, I don't know, I was born that way, or whatever. So being wholehearted, you find the energy. It's not just physical energy. It's your heart and soul energy. It's only when your heart and soul go out of it and then you drive yourself forward that you find something has changed, and that's when you start to burn out.
Yes. So how does that happen? How do the heart and soul fit into burnout? I found that it almost felt like it was just, it kind of caught me unawares. You know, when I started my practice, anesthesia practice, I was so thrilled. Yeah, just over time, I just found, yeah, it was like a bright light, and it just faded and faded and faded, and I really didn't know what to do. But how does the heart and soul fit into it exactly?
I think what typically happens when your soul is whispering that this is a good thing for you to be doing, and that could be a relationship, it could be work or whatever, and your heart is in it. There's a kind of a flow of energy which keeps you going. But what happens is that life is not static. Things change. So it could be that you change what worked for you before, it doesn't work for you anymore. Or it could be that the situation changed. The boss that was very nice is gone, and some horrible person who doesn't appreciate you has come along. Or there's something unfair that happens at work, you know, or the boyfriend has become unemployed and depressed and depends on you to apply for all his jobs, which is one example of the burnout. So something happens, either you change or the situation changed, but you've got your identity invested in what you were doing. If it's a relationship, it might be that you fear being single. Or if it's about work, it might be that you always thought the most important thing was to be successful. Or that your mother didn't go to college and always wanted you to go to college and accomplish this or something. There's something about it which makes your identity tied up with it, and you don't dare to stop and think about, is this good for me anymore or not? But there's a moment when you can avoid burnout if you step back and you look at the situation. And in fact, you've got three choices in that situation. One choice is, I change the situation. I find a way to make it a different situation. Another choice is, I change my attitude. I recommit by changing my attitude. And the third possibility is, I can't do either, so I leave the situation. If I do any of those, I call that the great yes or the great no. If I do any of those, I'm not going to burn out. But what happens is that we're afraid to stop and look, because what happens if I have to leave this job and my life depends on this job? But how can I be unemployed? What will happen to me? And so on. And so we don't stop, and instead we start driving ourselves, and we drive ourselves and we drive ourselves. And then slowly we start finding something's changed in our whole psyche and our whole body. We get exhausted. We wake up in the morning exhausted. We go to bed exhausted. Doesn't matter how much we sleep. That's very typical of burnout. We feel cut off. We're either cut off from the people that we have intimate relationships with, or we're cut off from our clients, or we're cut off from the other people who are working in the situation. We start getting often cynical. And you can see a whole burnt out office when you walk in and everybody's sitting around being very cynical. We start working harder and accomplishing less. Often people get ill more often or for longer. Often they get illnesses which shouldn't last and they keep lasting. Sometimes they get life-threatening, stress-related illnesses. Often people increase in their addictions. Their addictions could be drugs, but it could be alcohol, it could be shopping, it could be television, it could be computer games. So all these things start happening. And often we don't even notice it. We just keep going. And other people start worrying about us. But we're not worried. We're okay. We just don't have time to stop and talk about it. It's this sort of story. And eventually we grind to a halt. And we wake up one morning and we can't go to work. Or we can't do all the things that we normally do. And that's when our fire really is low. And then we have to stop. And then there's a possibility we will do something about it. Some people stop. And then they go to the doctor and say, doctor, make me better so I can go back and do the same thing I was doing before. But some people kind of get it, that going back and doing the old, putting the old show back on the road isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. And that's what I call radical healing, that you have to find a way to put the new show on the road.
That makes so much sense.
Which is what you did, actually.
Yeah, it is, actually. I'm making the transition. And, oh, my gosh, but just when I think of where I was, I felt, I think one of the reasons why it was difficult to look, in my experience, in some ways you sort of know. Like, you know what's going on. You know what you have to do. But like you say, you don't want to look too closely or admit it. And so you keep going. And I'm not sure why I maybe can address this, but there's a lot of guilt, it seems, attached to burnout. What have you found? Why do people feel so guilty about it?
About burning out?
Yes.
I think people feel guilty and they feel ashamed. The typical burnout person is a very high-energy person who gives and gives and gives. And it succeeds and succeeds and succeeds. And often someone who loves and loves and loves and makes a contribution. And that has been who they are. And on another level, what I say is they are like the goose that lays the golden eggs. They value the golden eggs they lay, but they're not valuing themselves as the goose, so to speak. So they feel that their identity is tied up in what they give and how they succeed and what they do and what their relationship is like. And so when the time comes that they can't do that thing that they were so good at doing, or we, because I'm another person who burned out, we get to the place where we feel useless. Now, we can't give, we can't succeed, we can't do anything. A very, very typical story is people say, I go to a party and someone says, what do you do? And I don't know what to say. And this is someone who's always known what to say, always have many stories about what they do and what they accomplish and how they give and how they make changes in the world. So it's very, very painful. And it involves also guilt about other people in your life who have helped you succeed, and now you're failing them, and the people around you who you feel you're going to become a burden to, and so on and so forth.
Yes, there is all of that there. Yeah, it's very, very interesting how those of us who have burned out or feel as though they're burning out, we give so much. And I felt as though I was still, when I left my medical practice, I still felt as though I was on the top of my game in terms of what I could do. But the inside, mm-hmm. felt as though it was missing, like the obligation that I had and the caring that I had for my patients was still there. But there's something critical that was missing. Like you said, the wholeheartedness piece of it drops out.
And now what often happens is that it's something to do with the institution that you're working with. I don't know if this is true for you, but sometimes it's the clients and the too much is being asked of people, but it very often is because something is wrong with the institution, some unfairness, some lack of appreciation, something is going wrong in that institution. So the thing that people are most upset about really is their working relationships. It's not always what the relationship with their clients are.
Mm-hmm. Or what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Specifically, like in your book, I think you had mentioned that, and forgive me if I have it wrong, but there's, just in general, if it's not in your book, is that there's, sometimes it's changing your work environment, that the work that you're doing is, you still like that, but something's changed in the work environment, and there's been a lot of research on that in terms of the organizational effect on burnout.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking of a doctor. He was a Dutch doctor. He was an obstetrician, and he loved his work. And he lived in a workplace that was a kind of a community, and it was really wonderful. And then the new system came in and swept this aside. He was called in and said he had to increase his productivity, and that meant he had to do more cesareans and more abortions. Oh, it wasn't more important, I'm not sure. But he had to do more cesareans. And being a Dutchman, he went for a bicycle ride. he decided, I can't work in this. And so he left the profession and he started working with dying people.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, and interestingly, that brings up something that segue into talking about recovery from burnout, but that just brings something to mind where sometimes people question, they might question, like, well, who was I ever if I thought I was this person because their identity was in the burnout. And then they think, like, well, who was I? Did I ever even know myself at all?
Yes.
And from the example that you gave of this Dutch physician, he did know himself. I mean, he knew his heart, and he was able to change into a profession where he still could be.
Yes.
It was a helping profession. And something that still
resonated
with, like, the core of who he is.
So he said what I call the great no. He said, no, this is not who I am, and I'm not going to do it. But I think the problem with knowing who we are is if we have been invested in the golden egg, so to speak, and we've thought that that's what our value is, we really don't know who we are. You know, we don't know who we are as someone apart from what we produce or give or do.
I hear what you're saying. Well, that brings us to where you'd noted that burnout is a message of renewal.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that it's a message of renewal when it feels so darn crappy?
It feels so darn crappy. it's a message of renewal in the sense that it's a message that it's time for renewal, is that you've gone too far down the wrong road, and that your whole energy system will not allow you to actually keep going in the wrong direction. It's a bit like you get stopped, and someone stops you and says, no, you can't go any further. And I do believe that actually burnout saved my life in some ways, because I do feel that if I hadn't been stopped by burnout, I could have got a heart attack or a stroke or something else if I'd kept going. And so I think that burnout stops us and says, no, I'm standing up for joy. I'm not going to let you go and kill yourself in this direction.
Right, yeah.
And so we stop, and then we have to reconsider. And if we don't just think, oh, I've got to go back to the same job, we start thinking, so who am I really? And what do I love? And why has this situation not worked for me? And what are my options? And see, very typically, what people feel is I can't change the old situation because I'm trapped. It's a very common word. And trapped, actually, in general, means I'm not really trapped. If it was really necessary for me to do what I'm doing, I wouldn't burn out. If it was really necessary. But trapped really means I'm telling myself it's necessary. And then we say, oh, I couldn't afford not to, or something. It's often about money, or it's about relationships with other people. But then it turns out, when they really decide to stop, things do work out in a different way. It's forcing us to stop in our tracks and think, what is possible now? And how do I find my joy? And that is the renewal.
Yeah. So it's like if you're using your analogy of driving the car, you're pushing on the brake and the gas at the same time.
Yeah.
The burnout is the time to pull to the side of the road.
Exactly.
And reassess.
Reassess.
So the answer isn't
I'm
to
driving
keep going.
The wrong direction.
You might be driving into traffic.
I've got to turn around. Exactly.
So how does joy come into burnout, and how can one recover? These are a lot of questions at once, but how does joy come in? How do you recover? And I'm so curious, too, about the, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're a groundbreaking specialist in imagery and image work. And could you talk about that, so that we've talked about how you get in and what it means.
Which one am I going to answer now?
Well, you can start anywhere you like.
Let me start with the prescription pair for what I call radical healing. And I call it radical healing. I call it radical healing because it's not about curing what's wrong with you. It's about reassessing who you are and finding a new way forward. And the first thing you have to do is it's a kind of an odd thing. It's what I call wait, give up hope, and keep the faith. And that means whatever it was that kept me driving myself in the direction that was going to possibly kill me, I've got to accept that I may never, never, never say be a success or have a partner again or fulfill what other people want me to do, whatever it is that my identity was. I may never, never, never do that, and I'll still be okay. I'll still be me. And so that's what I call wait. Give up the specific hope. I'm going to fulfill my parents' hopes or whatever, but keep the faith that I'll still be okay. And then the second thing, once you've stopped and waited to see what happens, is you have to start taking care of yourself, of the goose, not the golden eggs. Mm-hmm. You have to take care of your mind, your body, your emotions, and your spirit, not your work. This is a very hard thing for people who are typical burnout people to actually think about themselves.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to receive from others, much less.
It's hard to receive from others. It's hard to put yourself first. It's you know, but you have to. And it's very hard to convince them that it's not the work that comes first. It's you that comes first. It's you that gives your work value. And the third thing I talk about is living truthfully. The road to burnout is full of denial. We're denying that the thing isn't wrong for us. We're denying that we're getting ill. We're denying that we've cut off from our friends. We're denying everything. We just say, I just have to keep going. Just leave me alone. I'll just keep going. You know? And so we have to start living truthfully and to really see who we are and what we really believe. And I always say the truth hurts, but it doesn't harm. It's the illusions that kill us. And the next thing is that we have to reach out to other people, what I call a soul community. It's people who value us for who we really are and not for what we do and we accomplish. And very often the people who we thought would only value us if we were successful, if we go to them and say, I'm not successful and this is who I am, we actually find that those same people are going to still stand by us and still love us. It's mm-hmm. just that we never dared say that.
Right.
And then finally,
sort of
when you...
tricking yourself or fooling, like, because you're so, yeah, you're just lost, so you don't know.
Yeah.
You have to take a chance.
And it's a
people.
Really wonderful thing when you're really lost and you admit that you're lost and people still love you.
Mm-hmm.
If you thought you were the one who had to have all the answers. And then when you start moving again, when you've regained your strength and regained your hope and regained your picture of what you want, don't leave your joy behind. And what I always say is once you've been burnt out, burnout is always your teacher, because you find that what you could do before, the ways that you could mistreat yourself before, you can no longer do now. I don't know whether you find that. You can't drive yourself the same way that you used to. You start getting headaches or you start getting something much sooner. So you, and when you get these symptoms, you have to stop and say, oh, my God, I'm burning out again. What's going on? What do I need to do about it?
Yeah, I've definitely found that, especially now that there's a burnout expert that says it takes at least 2 years to recover from burnout. I think in your book you wrote that it took you
seven years, yes.
Yeah, and that, gosh, it's probably taken me about 3 or 4 to get to the point where I'm at. And it's gradual, and as you say, it's like to learn how to love yourself, value yourself, know yourself, and what you'd like to do, because we do express ourselves through our careers, improving our relationships, improving our nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And what else was I going to say? That I think what I notice is when you're so burned out, you kind of get there by ignoring things like you are strong, you're a super person. You're a superwoman,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely,
so
superwoman.
You can
it's very
ignore
typical.
Those things.
Superwoman.
Yeah, so
yeah.
You You might feel it, but you're like, oh, well, I have a headache, but I've got to get up and get going. And, you know, who's going to do it if I don't do it, which is another thing.
Yeah.
Enrolling people
I'm indispensable.
I'm indispensable in terms of what I do. And then, but not really realizing that the value is in who you are.
Exactly.
And, you know, how you express what you do is one thing, but to really realize that you, like you yourself, are a very important being that's unlike anyone else. And so you're important in and of yourself. So getting back caring for yourself, I notice and I really strive. Actually, I would say that one of my major goals for this year is to work and do the things that I like to do. And I still enjoy working hard when I am into it and I feel happy. I still love to work hard. So like you said, it's not about the work. But what it is about is taking breaks and noticing that when you're starting to noticing your body and what's happening and trying to maintain that sense of joyfulness as you go through your life. And that comes back to, you know, taking care of oneself, when valuing yourself, self-love, self-care. Yeah, and always happy, knowing that joy is there.
Listening.
Yeah.
And it's just listening. One of the things I say on the way to burnout is what happens is your soul's whispering and you're not listening. So you have to start listening to yourself. And all that denial and all that just the work's important doesn't work anymore. It's not going to keep you going anymore. And so you have to start listening and say, well, I'm feeling like this. What is going on? What is my soul telling me? What is my heart telling me? Oh, I see. I better listen.
And then I find, too, as I have found over these past 3 to 4 years, especially after working with a coach around this, is that you can have that whisper become louder, 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 the soul's whisper, until it really becomes a conversation.
Absolutely.
Where you are, when you decide to embark on anything or when you notice what's going on, you're like, your soul is like your partner and you're working together.
Exactly.
You know, how does this feel?
And
how does this, is this helping?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's, you know,
yeah.
If somebody had told me this 3-4 years ago, I would have thought they were completely crazy. But I get it now.
Now you get it, yeah.
Yeah,
and
I
you
get
asked
it.
About imagery, and yes, on imagery,
yes.
And imagery is really the soul talking. It's finding a way to really listen to your soul and to work with your soul, have that conversation, because everything you do in your world starts in your life starts as whether it's an omelet or a multinational corporation or a love affair starts as an image, and these images are often unconscious. And some of them are long past their sell-by date and could be dangerous. And so, for example, if I've got a little girl inside me who's just taught she must be a good girl and work very hard and achieve in school, or somehow she won't get any attention at home or won't be loved, and I'm being driven by that little girl inside me, I've got to go back and speak with the little girl and help that child and heal any wounds from that past. And so that's an example. Or, for example, if I want to know what to do in my life, it actually saying what I like to do and what I want to do isn't always the best question. It's often better for you to get an image. And the sort of thing I would do is take a person forward. It's 5 years from now, I'm feeling happy with my life. What am I happy about? What am I doing? What are my relationships like? How do I feel about myself? And then I look back and see how I got there. So I'm using what we call hindsight, but I'm using it through the imagery at the time, you know. So I do a lot of work with imagery. If someone is burnt out, they need to know where to go next. They can't do this visioning when they're first burnt out because it's not time. It's time for them to heal. It's time for them, you know, for example, they could go to the house of health, or they could get an image that's a metaphor for their life, or they could get an image of a time in the past when they considered there was the golden eggs that was important and not the goose. And they get an image and they work with the image and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people have an image which expresses where they are, very often it'll be an image of an animal in a cage, for example. And when it's an animal in a cage, it turns out always that there is a key available or that the door is really open or something. And so people do find out what their choices are and that they're not trapped and that they have got a way forward.
Something that I like to use, too, which is looking at your emotional endpoints. And sometimes it's hard to see, like, where you want to go. But you can sit and imagine sometimes how you want to feel. And then sometimes the images will come up that way, too. So it may be, I don't know what's going to happen, but this is how I want to feel about it.
Yeah.
I want to feel happy. I want to feel satisfied.
Yes. It's 5 years from now, and I feel happy.
Exactly.
What's the feeling, and how did I get there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what did I do to get there? What does it look like? You know, I'm just looking at another example of someone who's a kind of international coach and management consultant. And I met him, and he said when he'd read my book on imagery to change his life, he said he'd been doing a frustrating but well-paid job. And he read my book, my first book, Life Choices, and he said, I lay on the bedroom floor of my small flat, relaxed and started to visualize. I saw a house with me in it working upstairs and other people also involved in the work. I was single at the time, and a garden and a sign outside the door, a brass plate and a way of life very different to the one I was living at the time. And then after about 15 minutes, I got up from the floor, and then he described what his life is like now. And he started working towards the new future. He set up his business. He found his partner. He started working with other people. And it was all his permanent life. And he just saw it in those 15 minutes when he was lying on there. Now, he couldn't have done it in the normal way. He wouldn't have known what he wanted. But the imagery tapped into another level. And that level is what I would say, what we know, but we haven't told ourselves.
Yes. I love it. It's a way that you can free up your mind and get your mind out of the way, which is
exactly
where it needs to be.
Exactly.
And let your heart and your soul show up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you bring your mind back in, and it's going to help
you
to
mind
solve
back
the
in.
Problem of it's in a way like the mind is the servant of the heart and soul.
Yes,
so when you find out where you want to go and what you want to do, you bring your mind in so that you can solve the problem of how to get there. And how we often live is it's the mind, it's the rational mind in charge, and the heart and soul are kind of working for it. Well, that doesn't work. It's the heart and soul that would give you your vision of what's right for you, and then your mind is going to help you and help you make it happen.
Dr. Dana Gluverman, it has been such an amazing conversation, and I could talk to you all afternoon.
I'm sure we could, actually.
It's been such a pleasure and an honor, and as much as I hate to, we have to say goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay.
You've been listening to the Doctor's Life Podcast with Diane Ansari Wynn, MD. Go to www.dianeansari-wynn.com to read show notes, listen to past episodes, share your comments and show ideas, and pick up your free PDF and video of easy and proven strategies that will melt your daily stress away. That's www.dianeansari-wynn.com.